There are probably few topics that are so critical to the Jewish community for practical reasons as to define what a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is. And it's a very remarkable sugya. We're just going to touch some of its highlights, but it's a very remarkable sugya. Murray asks, Ezovi Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, what's a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim? And the Gemara only winds up with two very peculiar terutzim to it in reality. The Gemara says one is Saratya, there's a highway which goes from ear to ear, that's Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. And the other is Palatya, plaza, where large numbers of people gather. Palatya has a parallel in the Midbar, at least. That in the Machna Leviya, the Gemara asks, where was the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim in the Midbar? In the Machna Leviya. In those days, they didn't need Manhattan, and they didn't need the subways to get there. And there was no business, basically. So, as the Medrash says, Lo nitna Torah lo loich le'amon. Loich le'amon were the ones that were truly involved in Limud HaTorah. For 40 years, they were moved off, isolated and separated from the world, and all the normal goings on of life. And they were Isaac and Torah with Moshe Rabbeinu. So they came on a regular basis to the Machna Leviya to learn Torah. But that's the only Rosh Hashanah Rabbim we can define. There's a highway which goes from city to city and some major business center, but there's nothing else in any place that would be defined as Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. It's very, very peculiar. Very odd. We'll come back to that. Now, let's first deal with the issues that are clear, and then we'll deal with the issues that are unclear. Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, what definitions do we find in Shas to define Rosh Hashanah Rabbim? So we find one definition is it has to be a place which is 16 amos wide. Okay, if we take the largest figure that would be, would tell us that it's a street that has to be 32 feet wide. Now an important point that we have to note about this is, the Gemara brings a machlekes, a general lezer in the Chachamim, of tzidei Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, the sides of the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim have a din Rosh Hashanah Rabbim or not. And we might suspect then that if the sidewalks are part of the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim or not, would also be part of this issue of Tzidei Rosh Hashanah Rabbim or Rosh Hashanah Rabbim or not Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. However, upon careful examination of the Sugya, Rishayna, the two things are not related at all. They probably had Tzidei Rosh Hashanah Rabbim for the very same reason that we have sidewalks. And sidewalks serve two particular functions. One is they segregate the vehicular traffic from the pedestrian traffic, which makes life a lot safer for all parties concerned. But forgetting about the pedestrians, the sidewalks play a second role. The sidewalks segregate the vehicular traffic from the buildings. Now, therefore, if a guy goes out of control, if you go off, for example, on 69th Road, where it hits the Grand Central Parkway service road. So you'll note on the left-hand side, there are guardrails around the guy's lawn. Why are the guardrails around his lawn? I guess if there are X number of cars, I don't know how many there were, that wound up on his lawn, so the city's fathers decided it wouldn't be a bad idea to put up guardrails around this property and keep the next few guys off there. So, but the way we construct things with the sidewalks, if a guy happens to go out of control, most of the time, he doesn't crash into the house and wind up in somebody's living room. Usually, by the time he gets over the sidewalk and the lawns and the gates, he usually grinds to a halt before he actually winds up in somebody's house. So that's a second function, which is the sidewalk serve, to keep the vehicular traffic away from the buildings. What's clear in the Gemara is that the Tzidei Rosh Hashanah Rabbim were intended only for this latter purpose. Because what did they do? How did the homeowners protect themselves? what they used to do was they piled stones up along the edges of the Rosh Hashanah. So they didn't have motor vehicles, but you had wagons, etc., that could move at a pretty rapid clip that were pulled by animals. And you didn't want one of these things crashing into your house. So they piled up stones along the sides of the Rosh Hashanah to push the vehicular traffic away from the buildings. Now, because of the fact that they piled up stones, it was not a place that was easy to walk. The result of that being that the pedestrians also did not walk normally on the Tzid Rosh Hashanah. The only machlokis apparently revolves around the fact that when you had enormous amounts of people for some reason in the street, so people used then every square inch so they would flow over and climb over the stones too to move along the derech of the Rosh Hashanah. So that's the question: does that qualify? Because at times it's used as an extension of the Rosh Hashanah to be called the Rosh Hashanah, or because of the fact that it's really not usable in a conventional fashion, and most of the time, in fact, it was not used in this particular way, that therefore it's not considered Rosh Hashanah. Our sidebooks, which are clearly intended for the Hiluch of the Rav, do not fit the definition and Shas of this Machlokas of Tzidei Rosh Hashanah. But the consequence of that is twofold. It's not only what is defined as the Rosh Hashanah, but clearly from that standpoint, when we want to count the Tes Zayin Amos in the street, we have to count from the property line on one side of the street to the property line on the other side of the street as a minimum. We'll assume that the private property, for reasons that I'm not going to explore at this moment, is not included in that. But all the area which is devoted to the Rabbim for Hiluch, and for the Rabbim's use, which is from the property line on one side of the street to the property line across the street, is included in the Tes Zayin Amos. Now, therefore, typically, in our streets are always going to have Tes Zayin Amos, without any doubt, even the relatively small streets. When we consider the fact that every street has enough room for a car, at least one car to park on each side, plus room in the middle for a car to go down the street without hitting those two cars, with ample room around it, and in most streets, even enough room for another car to squeeze around the first guy that's going down the street, plus two sidewalks, it becomes apparent that in most streets, we're going to have streets which meet the requirement of Tes Zayin Amos. That's number one. Number two, the second requirement is that it be Eino Makura, that it not have a roof over it. So, for example, if you have a place outside a building, what's called a porte cochere, where a car pulls up on the outside of the building. Menachem will understand. He comes from the world part of the world where they talk like that, right? Montreal. So, a porte cochere, so if you, since it has a roof over it, it's not a Rosh Hashanah. Probably the most significant place in the city of New York where this is relevant is the subway system, despite the fact that it's occupied by millions of people a day, because of the fact that it has a roof over it, cannot qualify as a Rosh Hashanah. Now, my assumption is that the major issue concerning the Erevin in the large cities started in the beginning of the 19th century. And the Mishkan Os Yaakov was the one that started this whole commotion. And I presume that the reason that it was not such a commotion beforehand stemmed from the fact that in many places they probably did not have streets that were 16 amos wide. That's my suspicion. I cannot be sure of that, but that's the suspicion that I have. Because I see even today, if one goes off in the country roads, up in the Catskills, the streets probably don't have 16 amos across. They're much narrower than that. So my assumption is that in village life in Eastern Europe, the streets were not 16 amos wide. So there was no major discussion in this entire period preceding the beginning of the 19th century as to what exactly is a Rosh Hashanah and how in larger cities you make an Erev, you don't make an Erev. As in most things in Jewish history, precedent keeps ruling until one day somebody wakes up and says, you know, this looks a little bit different than the precedents. And then we start to examine if the precedents are really applicable. In most of the world, there was a movement from rural areas to urban areas. And obviously, in Eastern Europe, such things took place as well. Not on the scale that we're used to today, where rural Jews and rural Jewry is almost unknown. Rural Jewry was well known all the way until the time of the Holocaust. There were small towns, villages. But people already in the 19th and 20th century were living in large cities. And large cities tend to have the fact, it's quite clear in Aruch HaShulchan, that the streets that he was used to in Russia, in the cities, were 16 amas wide. So that could no longer serve as the basis for a heter. And so what started after this is an examination of all the other factors which determine a Rishus HaRabbah. And the truth of the matter is that we probably do not have an extensive body of tshuvas discussing this, because these were not really relevant sugyas. In other words, those that wrote on Shas, they wrote the perushim on the sugya, and they went on. When we have very clear-cut precedent is when something is nogeya l'maisa, a particular sugya, and the poskim start to write on it at length, major tshuvas. So then we have much more development to the ideas. And that probably in the last two centuries, a lot more has been written than was written before. Because I don't even know if prior to the Mishkanos Yaakov, at the beginning of the 19th century, if we had even a major discussion concerning the issue of Shishim Rebo versus not Shishim Rebo. One of the issues in the Rishonim is, does a Rishus HaRabim need 600,000 people? Now, how to count the 600,000 people is something that we probably can't figure out even exactly until today. That's part of the major problems that we have. What does 600,000 people mean? But the first one that really discussed this in a very heavy way was the Mishkanos Yaakov, as far as I'm aware of. To try to analyze all the shittas and take a stance based on Shas, which one is correct, which one is not correct, is we find it in Mishkanos Yaakov. Now, this is very strange that we have discussed in the Rishonim, does a Rishus HaRabim have to have 600,000 people or not? Now, one would ask a very simple question. Something which is such a basic part of Rishus HaRabim, how could the Gemara not discuss it? And yet, there's no clear-cut statement that involving not in Yerushalmi, which would tell us that Rosh Hashanah needs 600,000 people. No such Gemara. You can turn the pages of Shas in vain. Again, there's no such Gemara. All we have is, the Gemara asks a stira. The Gemara asks the following question. We have two sources. One which says the Midbar, the desert, is a Rosh Hashanah, and one which says it's a Carmelis. It's a semi-public place. It's not really a public thoroughfare, or a public domain. And the Gemara gives an answer that Khan, when he saw the Shuyim B'Midbar, Khan, Shein Yisman, Shein Yisrael Shuyim B'Midbar. When the Jews were in the Midbar, it's one din, and when the Jews were not in the Midbar, it's a different din. Now most of the Rishonim understood this Gemara to mean that when Klal Yisrael was in the Midbar, it's Rosh Hashanah, and when we're not in the Midbar, then it's not a Rosh Hashanah. Now, why it is or isn't a Rosh Hashanah is again subject to two interpretations. One view is, very simply, that a Midbar is not a place where people are typically found. It tends to be, and there's a reason, in fact, that in the English language we have one word pronounced somewhat differently, but I think associated with each other, that a desert and deserted are associated with each other. We use the word because deserted indicates that it's like a desert. It's deserted. People don't go, who goes to Death Valley? It's just not hospitable for human life. So people stay away from it. So that's the simple explanation, that it was not a Rosh Hashanah. Well, it was a Rosh Hashanah when Klal Yisrael was there, because then 600,000 people lived in the Midbar. When Klal Yisrael left the Midbar, so it went back to being a place which is very infrequently used. The public really does not make use of it, and therefore it's not a Rosh Hashanah. Lacks, now. So is it, now, that when there are 600,000 people, then it is Rosh Hashanah, and in its absence it's not Rosh Hashanah? Or merely, it's when, it's not the question of the number, it's a question when Klal Yisrael was there, it's used by the public. And when Klal Yisrael left, it's not used by the public. The number not being significant, but merely the fact that there is a public that's using it. This is the divide and how to learn this Gemara. Now what happens to be there's even a third interpretation of this Gemara that takes the Gemara and flips the Gemara around exactly in the opposite direction. And this is a tshuva of Rabbeinu Avraham and a Rambam, who interpreted the Gemara as best I can understand in the following fashion. That norm, when Klal Yisrael is not in the Midbar, then it's Rosh Hashanah. Why? Because then there's uninhibited access. But suppose you come and you have 600,000 squatters that sit down in the middle of the Midbar and you impede your progress, that's not a Rosh Hashanah. You know, when the cars are parked on the Long Island Expressway and they're not moving anywhere, so how much of a Rosh Hashanah is it?
Yeah, but I don't understand where the number comes from. When the Torah talks about
600,000 men over the age of 20. So we'll come to this question. So then the question is, where did this number 600,000 come from? All we have in the Torah is that there were 600,000 men between 20 and 60. Now, by the most elementary of calculations, there had to have been at least 3 million people in the Midbar, minimum. If not more, but at least 3 million people that were in the Midbar. So, what became sacrosanct about the number 600,000? And this becomes really, as I said, it's difficult because at least the Tashas would say 600,000 in Mela. But this is a number sort of created out of the thin air because there's no source in the Tashas. And for that reason, there's no shortage of different possible interpretations of what the 600,000 is and how to count the 600,000, endless interpretations. Some say the simplest explanation is that 600,000 is the number that the Torah specifically mentioned. So we know we need that amount. The fact that we can calculate and were other people present, but they're not specifically mentioned in the Torah. So the fact that 600,000 are mentioned, so it's the presence which is of Klal Yisrael which is defined. The defined presence is 600,000. Everything else is, we're sort of speculating. We know that it is, but it's speculative by nature. There was a Gavra Rabba, the Zecher Tzadik Nevrach, who wanted to argue 600,000. Says has to be 600,000 Jews. And I don't think anyone else agreed with him, but he was a big guy. Why? It's because that's what you had in Diglei Midbar. You had 600,000 Jews. Who says the non-Jews count in the 600,000? It lends itself to endless interpretations. Where do you need the 600,000 people? Big problem. Do we have a street where 600,000 people go on every single day? I don't know if in the entire city of New York there's such a street. I'm not sure. It's true, 3 million people a day descend on Manhattan. But the 600,000 of them necessarily pass to any given street in that day? I don't know. Maybe there is such a street in Manhattan. I don't know. Now, do you need it on a daily basis, on a yearly basis, on a periodic basis? These are all open questions. Because when we're dealing with something which is not defined in the Gemara itself, so we don't even have a source to go back to, we can scratch on the Rishonim to find a few words here and there which give us the view of this particular region on the subject, but there's no sukkah. There's another requirement of Rosh Hashanah, and that is that Rosh Hashanah be mefulish. Now, mefulish means it's a thoroughfare, it goes through. does mefulish imply that it be straight? What happens if the street bends? Say I have a street which goes from one end of Manhattan to the other, from the tip to tip of the island, but no street, right? Take Broadway, right? From one end of the island to the other, you have Broadway. But it's not straight. The street winds all over, from east to west and back. So wind winds. And then how much of a wind does it have to have? I mean, you could prove from the Gemara that it doesn't have to be, there's a Rias in the Gemara and Erev, and it does not have to be absolutely straight. But how unstraight can it be? And Rashi does say in Erev in one place that it's Sha'oros, the Sha'orim, the gates of the city, or Mechuvonim, were lined up. In other words, there was a north-south and an east-west, and you went in a straight line from one to the other. So do you need that or not? And again, there are all different interpretations of what mefulish means. That it has to be mefulish. Some learn that it has to be straight. Some learn that it doesn't mean that at all. What it means is that it has to be a Rishus HaRabim throughout. So Moshe's interpretation of mefulish. That along the way, it didn't lose its status as Rishus HaRabim. That suddenly has a roof over it for three blocks and then starts again. So, that also has subject to varied interpretations. There's, furthermore, the Gemara talks, and it's all of this is relatively one Amud Gemara. That's all. One Amud Gemara. Davov and Erev. The Gemara says that Yerushalayim molei dal sosen ulos balaylo. If not for the fact that the doors were closed in the night time, they closed the doors of the city, it would be Rishus HaRabim. Now the Gemara also talks about dal sosen ruyelino, doors which could be closed, which are not closed. So how frequently do the doors have to be closed? Does it suffice that they can be closed? Must they be closed? So this again, subject to many, many different interpretations. Is it enough that we close the street once a year? Maybe that's Dalsa Sen Ulis. Once a year, it's Ais Rishus HaRabim. We close the street down one day a year. In Forest Hills Gardens, one day a year they used to harass you not to go through, to assert that it's private streets. And that's it. That was for the Arab. I'm talking about the people. But in the private streets of Forest Hills Gardens, there was no Arab there. But the people that owned it, one day a year they harassed you with the traffic. They didn't let you go through. You know, they asserted that this is us. Kicked the Rabbim out. So what's Dal Sosen Ulis? What do you need for Dal Sosen Ulis? Plus the fact, there's another issue, which has to do with losses. If we have a door that we could close, but the door is wider than 10 amos, so now we enter a new problem. The Gemara tells us that if I have Oymeg Merubala parts, if the part which is enclosed in a given area is greater than the open part, then it can have a din of Rishus HaYochid. The question is, what happens if you have Pirtzas Eser? If you have an opening which is 10 amos. So, now, the halacha is that a Pirtzah of 10 amos is a Pirtzah. It's a problem. It makes a gap. That's true. Now, though, that din of Pirtzas Eser, is that a deraisa dikadin or a derabanan dikadin? And that's again something. It is not mefurish anywhere in Shas and not mefurish in the Rishonim, which it is. Now, it makes a very, very big difference. If Pirtzas Eser is only with the derabanan, then obviously there'll be a lot more leeway in construction of Erevin than if Pirtzas Eser is the Raisa. So this subject was very, very, very hotly debated between the Chazon Ish, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and one of his Talmidim that's still living today. Between the 1940 and 1950, in that range, they went hot and heavy at it, with riots from all over Shas, back and forth. The Chazon Ish held Pirkei Esther as the Rabbanan, and his Talmud held that Pirkei Esther is the Raisa. It was 30 years after the Chazon Ish was Nifter. I noticed Talmud of the Chazon Ish, and I met him. And I wanted to bring a raya, or I have a raya for the first mission in Erevin that Pirkei Esther is the Rabbanan. That Pirkei Esther is not the Raisa. So, I just started to talk to him about the subject. And the fire, he was breathing fire instantly. It was like, you know, the 30 years that the Chazon Ish had been Nifter, it hadn't changed a thing. And believe me, he was a very, very respectful Talmud of his Rebbe, but he's a Gavur Rabbe. When he sees something his way, he sees it his way, you know, he fights. He started shooting fire. He says, it was 30 years, the Chazon Ish was gone for 30 years. He hadn't had it out with him in 30 years, but the fire was instantaneous. So this is a very major issue, because we always have Pirkei Esther that we're always going to have. We don't have a walled city which goes around and around and around all the way. So what are we, the Raisa or the Rabbanon, in the creation of this Erev? Now, when we have a Delos, and let's say it's in those situations, let's say, for example, it's not for Rosh Hashanah, let's say it's for Rosh Hayochid, meaning that it's dealing in a private place. So in a private place, you can have dalsus or ruuyas lino, could also be fine. It may not help if it's a Rosh Hashanah, it has all the requirements of Rosh Hashanah. But to be the mechitza of a Rosh Hayochid, where the choice is either it's going to be a Carmelis or a Rosh Hayochid, so a delos or ruuyas lino, the fact that it could be closable, it's functioning the door. Now, what happens if the space is more than 10 amos wide? Is this a pirtza? It's a break in the mechitza, but it's not a break because the fact that it has a delus, the delus itself takes off the din of the pirtza. The Chazon Ish and Rav Moshe and the Aruch HaShulchan as well for that matter, all of them maintain that the delus definitely had a Tzuras HaPesach. Any delus. I presume maybe just by dint of its regular construction that it had a Tzuras HaPesach. So they say that's not the issue. The issue of, so a Delos or Ruya Lino, if it didn't have a Tzuras HaPesach together with it, and consequently it was a Pirtzas Esser, so that would be a breach in the Mechitzas, according to them. So Mameila, if I have a door, the door is open, and it's 25 feet wide, but I could take this huge gate and close it. It's functioning. I could close the gate up and nobody can go in. So it's Delos HaRuya Lino. But right now it's 25 feet open and there's no Tzuras HaPesach, right? They don't have the pole with the wire going across the top. So one might have argued from the Gemara that's not a Pirtza. But all of these Gdolim, all Paskin otherwise, they Paskin that it's a Pirtza. But that's not the only word there is on this subject. I believe in the Shalas and Shubas, the Bris Avram argues the other side of the issue, that the Delos suffices without the Tzuras HaPesach. So this is a very, very, this happens to be is a very common issue in many, many places, in many, many areas. Do we have to bother to construct the Tzuras HaPesach where we have Delos HaRuya Lino? Now, once we got to the large cities, so then we got involved in defining Shishim Riba. Now, there is a kasha, it's interesting. This kasha was first asked by the Mishkanos Yaakov. You have to understand, let me give you an introduction a little bit about the Mishkanos Yaakov before I tell you what he did. The last figure that probably did such type of things before him was the Marshal 3 centuries before. The Marshal lived at a time when the era of the Rishonim had ended and the era of the Achronim was beginning. But the Marshal was not, did not so keenly recognize the change, that he lived in an era which had changed. And therefore, it's very common, if you learn in the Yom Shlomo, for example, that he takes the Rishonim to task. And he plays Machriya not like the Rishonim. He has his own Mahalach in the Sugya. The Marshal very commonly does that. After the Marshal, it's not something that we find. The Marshal and on, basically, the world settled down. The Marshal was a contemporary, really, of the Ramah, a distant cousin of the Ramah, and a contemporary of his. They exchanged correspondence. But from then on, we don't find such a thing. The Mishkanos Yaakov was, in some regard, such a type of figure in his tshuva still. He was a goyin of unbelievable proportions, that's true. But he was very, very freewheeling. I mean, he said it the way he saw it. No holds barred. So when he started to investigate this matter in his tshuvas of the necessity of Shishim Rivo, so he says he can't build an Erev based on Shishim Rivo for two reasons. He says, number one, he says, despite what the Shulchan Aruch and the early Achronim thought, most of the Shittis Rishonim disagree with that view. So therefore it's not Lahalocha. And probably that's a debatable statement. In the Chofetz Chaim, Zecher Tzadik Livruch and Simon Shin Mem Hei, went to town to find every conceivable Shita and Rishonim that he could find, he could get his hands on. And I have never seen so many Shitas Rishonim assembled on one topic as he managed to assemble on this topic, the Yedid Shishim Rivo or not. And the Chofetz Chaim finds 25 Shitas Rishonim, and they're split 13 to 12. Okay, so I think we can basically assume from that it's a broad enough sample that we can assume the Rishonim are split 50-50 on the subject. That was his first contention in Mishkanos Yaakov. His second, he says, irrespective of that, he says, you can't pass on like that because they're wrong. I told you, the Mishkanos Yaakov, it was no holds barred. Now, he had one very famous kasha that he asked, and I do not believe that there's any other teretz in print in his kasha by anyone in the last 200 years other than Ramosha Zatzal. And Ramosha asked the kasha on his own and said the teretz on his own. Ramosha did not even quote the Mishkanos Yaakov when he asked the kasha. So obviously, in Ramosha's scheme of Shas, this was a very obvious problem. And he's the only one that I know that offered a teretz to it. I mean, I saw someone else that wanted to claim that based on a certain sheet of the Bahag, there was a teretz to it, but I felt at the end that he did not properly understand the question. And consequently, the answer was not germane. The question is a very simple question. The question is, we have a machlokes in Shas, in the first parak in Shabbos. Hamoitzei merushus harabim, rather, hamoitzei merushus hayochid, through a karmelis, so I started off in my house, I marched out, I didn't stop in the Carmelis, and I came to a halt in the Rosh Hashanah. Now, as you know, Hotzah is a very unique halacha, that when it comes to Hotzah, it's not enough merely to walk, but I have to start and I have to stop. If I walk, I started in my house, and I walked around the Rosh Hashanah the entire day, around and around and around, and I didn't stop, and I went back home again and stopped in my house, or I stopped in a different Rosh Hashanah, but I wouldn't violate Hotzah the Raisa. You need Akira, you have to start off in one Rishus, and Anocha, I have to come to a halt in a different Rishus. So, the Shailah, this guy started off Rishus Harabim. He went through a Carmelis, and then he arrived in the Rishus Harabim itself. So what's the deal? What happens here? So we have a Machlokes. One sheet to hold, not the Chachamim, that I'm potter. Why? Because the halacha is, suppose I started with Rishus HaYochid, I marched off, I stopped in a Carmelis, and then I started going again and went to the Rishus HaYochid, so Rishus HaRabim, stop in the Carmelis, start again, and finally stop for the last time in the Rishus HaYochid, or rather Rishus HaRabim. I'm potter. The Choladeus. Why? Because the first Akira was Rishus HaRabim. The Hanocha was in a Carmelis. So what I did is I did a Maisa Vaitzah from a Rishus HaYochid to a Kabbalist. That's the use of the Rabbanah. Now I started walking again. So now I did a Maisa Kira from a Carmelist, and I made a Hanocha B'Rishusa Rab. Right, as I did two Yisrael the Rabbanah. There's no derice. That's Muslim. That's Klol Cholodeis. The issue of the Gemara is that we say Mahalach Ka'imit. That since there was a portion of the time that we're walking, both feet are up on the ground. So that's considered as if I made a Hanocha or not. That's a Machlokas Tanoim in the Gemara. Tosis goes into all types of permutations. You would say that, and how do you have a din of Mavur Dalar Amos Rishus Sarabim? Every step should be a Hanocha. Okay, that's Tosis' problem. It's not our problem for now. So according to the Chacham, now, the Gemara says in the beginning of Azirik, where did we find Haitzah, the Malach of carrying in the Torah itself? So it's in the stories in the Chumash. When the Gaboyim went to collect money for the Mishkan, so the money started off, the people had their in the Rishus HaYochid, and the people went and they made their donations and brought them to the Machne Leviyim. So they went from Rishus HaYochid. Now the little tiny streets in between the tents were undoubtedly a Carmelis, even if they had Tesai and Amos in them, but there was no business center. There was no reason that Chish and Revo are assembling in any street of those streets. All the Gemara can find is in Machne Leviyah, the people assembled. So that being the case, so they must have been a Carmelis. So if you hold like the Chachamim, that if you start off Rishus HaYochid, you march through a Carmelis non-stop, and you finally come to a halt in the Rishus HaRabim, that Yechayev, so that's where we learned it's all from. When they made the donations to the Mishkan, they started in the house, they went through the little Carmelis, the little side streets on the way, and eventually they showed up in Machne Leviyah, the Rishus HaRabim, the boy. But according to the Tanakh, it says Mahalach Ka'imeh, so it's as if they stopped along the way, even if they didn't physically stop. But halachically, it's as if they stopped in the Carmelis, so there's no Haitzah. So if this is the case, then the Gemara should have explained, but what do you do according to the Tanakh that holds Mahalach Ka'imeh? I mean, how did he learn Haitzah, if you can't learn it? This is the Kasha that the Mishkan of Yaakov asked. And he has no terror to this Kasha. So this is one major proof that he had that you can't say you need Chish and Reba. So if you don't need Chish and Reba, it's fine. But tell me that the lanes in between the houses, the tents in the Midbar were 16 amas wide. Man, people came and went from there. There were public thoroughfares. That's how you accessed your house. And obviously they were lined up in streets and people came and went. So that's a Rishus HaRab. But if you need a Chish and Reba, where's the Chish and Reba? That is a very perplexing problem. Ramosh Zatzal, in one of his tshuvas, as I say, he has the same kasha as Ov. He was a goyin of unbelievable proportions, Ramosh. In one sense, besides everything else, his cheshbon of shas was so awesome that in his major, major tshuvas that he wrote, that people have researched all through all the achronim, hundreds of years of achronim that wrote, you cannot find a svara discussed in Chupas Achronim in his major inyanim that he did not have was not accounted for in his mahalach in the sugya. In other words, he saw every possible way that he could learn the sugya, and he was able, in fact, to cheshbon through on all the places in Shas exactly how it impacted and how it came out and exactly how to weigh it. You weren't going to bring him tomorrow some tshuva that someone, somebody godel was mechadish priest in some gemara, some raya somewhere, and who I get it didn't hear it before. His grip on shas, his profundity was such, and people have researched on some of one of his major, major tshuvas that he wrote, that they could not find a kol tshuva sahrayna in one svar that he did, that was not accounted for in his mahalach in the sugya. So everything. And so, in an awesome fashion. So this too. So Ramosh Zatzal said that he has a very awesome chiddush, but that's all that he could see to be miyashu. It's a very revolutionary chiddush, and it brings us back to what we started at the beginning of the shir. And this stemmed to the, I asked you at the beginning, the only Rishus HaRabim we could define is a plaza and a road, and that's it. And nothing else is a Rishus HaRabim. So Ramosh said no. That's not even the issue of the Gemara. The Gemara, there are two types, Rav Moshe said, of Rishus HaRabim. There's a sitting which is a Rishus HaRabim because it has certain characteristics. I don't need people to assemble at any given place or use any one place for that city to be called a Rishus HaRabim. Then there are places which do not meet the standard that we have for cities, but yet they are Rishus HaRabim because they have certain specific uses, commercial uses, a plaza where people come together, a thoroughfare that people travel on. So even though we don't normally have Shishim Rebo in this place, but sporadically, some of the time I have Shishim Rebo come to this place, that also gives it a din Rishus HaRabim. That's what the Gemara was investigating. But he says, what's our paradigm Rishus HaRabim? So our paradigm Rishus HaRabim is something else altogether. He says, any area which was similar to the Digle Midbar, means it's an area of Yud Beis Mil by Yud Beis Mil, maximum size 9 miles by 9 miles, it could be according to many Shittas somewhat smaller than that, 8 miles by 8 miles, or even a little smaller yet, and there are Shishim Rebo people within that area of Yud Beis Mil by Yud Beis Mil. But Ramesha wasn't finished yet. He said, it would make little sense to me, he said, to count the people that were inside the houses. They shouldn't count because they're not in the streets. He says, the Shishim Rebo means, is an estimation of the number of people that Bein B'yom or Bein B'layla might be in the streets. So he made an estimate on whatever way he based this estimate, which also answers, well, how did we come to 600,000 when there were perhaps 2.5 or 3 million in the Midbar? So he says, when you have a population in Yud Beis Mil by Yud Beis Mil in excess of 2.5 million people, then you likely, throughout the day and night that you'll have Shishim, not at, it doesn't mean 3 in the morning, but on a regular basis in the day and the night time, you'll have Shishim Rebo people in the street. You'll have Shishim Rebo people wandering in the streets at different times of the day, sometimes in the day and sometimes at night. Doesn't mean that you're going to have it at 5 o'clock in the morning, but at 8 o'clock, at 9 o'clock in the morning, you'll have hundreds of thousands of people in the street. Other times, you're likely to have Shishim Rebo at many times. That sufficed, according to him. So he both accounted for the fact to 2.5 million people. The Shishim Rebo was a reflection, he felt, of approximately 1/4 of the people. And in his estimation, we should assume that 1 out of 4 people is probably in the street at any given time. You know, on a regular basis. Now, hang on. So, that's what he said. That constitutes a Rishus HaRabim. Now, it comes at a very surprising thing, and that is the following. So, according to Rav Moshe, what came out, is the Rishus HaRabim is not only the Machane Leviyah, but also the little side streets in the Machane Yisrael, in the Midbar, also Rishus HaRabim. Now, the truth is, we have an acid test to determine. So the only explanation we have, according to the Shishim Rebo Shita, of why the side street should be Rishus HaRabim, is Rav Moshe's explanation, which he used to answer his problem. Now, interestingly, we find the Rishalmi, Pnei Yeshua cites it, or Aruch HaShulchan cites it, the Rishalmi indicates that there was Hitzah, not only when I started in my house and wound up in the Machane Leviyah, but when the Gaborim came to collect for the Mishkan, and I gave them something in their hand, as they stood outside my door, I also violated Hitzah, without marching all the way off to the Machane Leviyah. Now, the Bnei Yoshua Nazaira clearly says that this is Pshat in the Rishalmi. The Aruch HaShulchan admits that it seems like it's Pshat in the Rishalmi, but he wants to dismiss it, because he has no way of accounting for how it could be. But that's Pashtus HaYerushalmi, and the Bnei Yoshua learns the Rishalmi that way, and the Aruch HaShulchan was inclined to, except he couldn't explain it. Simon Shin Mem Hei. So according to Rav Moshe, in fact, Rishalmi fits exactly. Rishalmi is a raya tzuma to his shita. Because the Rishalmi in there, otherwise, how could it be that the little side streets in the Midbar were a Rishus HaRabim? What possible explanation could there be according to the shita that holds in each Shishim Rebo? Now the consequence of this is enormous. So, because what we do, well, we're the situation that we're in nowadays is we seem to meet just about all the criteria for Rosh Hashanah in our large cities. And with the Shishim Ribo, we're pushing the limits to them. So Rav Moshe, this first emerged when there was a question of making Erev in Manhattan. And Rav Moshe published a tshuva, which is long in the Igros, was probably published and written in the 1950s, that based on this base situation, other factors as well, but for this reason alone, that you could not make an Erev in Manhattan. Because the basic halach is the following. An Erev, when we're talking about an Erev, we're talking about poles and wires. Not a wall around the place. I'm talking about making an Erev Atikan Yerushalayim, that we're going to build a wall around the city. We're talking about poles and wires. The halacha is that when there's a rabbim, if you have Rosh Hashanah rabbim, then the rabbim smashes the mechitza down. That's the halacha. I guess since they walk through, so what do you mean it's a Rosh Hashanah yochid when there's a rabbim that's marching through here and renders it useless? If there's a wall, you can't walk through a wall. You can't be mevatel a wall. One of the questions that revolves around this is this bittul mechitzas, is this deraisa or derabbanan? Chofetz Chaim holds it's deraisa. That's what a Chofetz Chaim is machmer, and felt that one should not rely upon any Eruv, which is as a chumrah. He's not passing me as a chumrah, but it's roy lahai to be machmer to the extent possible. And any Eruv which relies upon using Shishim Ribo, that one shouldn't, because of Osir Rabim Mevatel Mechitzas, and that's a din deraisa. That's a din deraisa, it's a sub deraisa. Those that are inclined to be makel, that perhaps either one of two reasons. The Aruch HaShulchan says, and he says this in more than one place in the Aruch HaShulchan, there's certain halachas that we have no idea why the Kfiyas and Klal Yisrael became like a certain day. We cannot understand the process. It defies any explanation that we have, except for the fact, as he writes in this issue, that for hundreds of years, he says, before his time, Aruch HaShulchan lived at the end of the 19th century. He died in 1906, I believe. For hundreds of years, he wrote, Klal Yisrael has been semech on the view that you need Shishim Ribo. It's as if, and it's not the only place in Aruch HaShulchan writes this, it's as if a bas kol came down from heaven and proclaimed that this is the halacha, that this is what Klal Yisrael is supposed to do. So he says, to rescind that psak is an impossibility. It is so well established for hundreds of years in Klal Yisrael. And Klal Yisrael is noyeg like that. There's no, that's it. The issue is settled. He goes to be mechadish his own reasons why, what the Erev and Bismanenu were based on. But he says, lemaisa, that's the way it is, that's the way it has to be. So the question is, Sir Moshe felt that we've stepped beyond the Shishim Ribo by any definition in Manhattan. And this is what arose later when he was asked his view on making an Erev in Flatbush. He very, very carefully reviewed the population densities, and he concluded that the population in Brooklyn was too dense. I mean, all types of things went around that has to do that Brooklyn is called Brooklyn, and Queens is each post office is separate, and nothing to do with that. It had to do with the fact that Moshe got from the real estate board from the city of New York, and he reviewed with his people very carefully what the population density of each part of the city was. And when he did that in the late 1970s, or circa 1980, exactly, I don't remember the year, between 78 and 82, but in those years when the issue was alive, he also, at the same time, he reviewed the population density of Queens. And the population density of Queens is lesser, for many reasons, than the population density in Brooklyn. We have much more single-family homes here. We have areas down along Howard Beach in there which are sparsely populated. And he did many calculations in all different ways. And it has not changed much. It's changed minimally since he made the calculations. That the population density of Queens is less dense than the population is less than Brooklyn, and it's less dense than it was in Brooklyn.
Do we count the whole borough? Or
I'll tell you how he did it. Rav Moshe started from the Yam. He said the place you have to start is from the Yam. So in Brooklyn he started from Seagate, and he calculated out about how a square which would come out to Digle Midbar, and that's how we measured. And he used all different calculations. He measured in a number of different ways, assuming that Yud Beis Mil would be different sizes. So in Queens, you also start at the yam. And you start to calculate and whatever, and you
what
can.
What is the densely populated area? You know, that's far from them. You know,
what I say, he went. He did all of that. He set up the same Yud Beis mill. He did not find the only way that he found.
The Yud Beis mill
started from there and included the only way. He said that it could have been Osser in Queens is if he jumped over the East River into Manhattan, and he held that that was clearly a division. That's the only way that he could conceive of that Queens could be Osser. Is if he jumped the East River. But without jumping the East River, there was no way that he could come to a conception of how Queens could be awesome.
What about the cars? I mean, in Forest Hills, you got the air on both sides of Queens Boulevard, and you got cars going?
I want to tell you, the number, I can't tell you today, but I will tell you, when I lived in Forest Hills, you know the number of people that traveled on Queens Boulevard a day? The police had about 125,000, 100,000, whatever. When they made it, there are those, in fact, it doesn't mean that everyone in Queens was necessarily pleased. The Rabbanim and Forest Hills swore and had a right to come to that conclusion. They did their investigation with the police department. That doesn't mean that every other neighborhood in the United States that would make an area would take a street like Queens Boulevard and put it into the area. I'm not, you know, saying that they don't have a right to, but large streets tend to get, some Rabbanim nervous about what exactly, how much traffic and how many people. But in fact, they did take that into judgment that there was not... What?
Are we getting the residents as far as told? They open and shut pedestrians and people who live there as well?
Well, some of those people are the same people that live in Forest Hills that, you know, in Queens, that you count how many times you're going to count them. You know, the only ones that are there, you can't count them, you know. He lives in the house, now he's in the street, he went out and back, I'll count them 5 times in one day, you know. So you have a certain amount of people that go through down Queens Boulevard and disappear to somewhere else, you know. So those add to the number. And the cheshmen, all the various populations were all pilpled about. I happened to be at a particular time when this was going on, I was very plugged into Rav Moshe's circle for a few years. And in this particular time, I was very well plugged into it. Now he was, so again, Rav Moshe did not come to impose his view on Klal Yisrael. He said, he has no such intention. If you want to know his view, I'll tell you his view. If there should be an error, there shouldn't be. If you want to listen, if you're one of those Jews that listens to him, we'll tell you what he held. But he did not come to impose his view. Rav Moshe mixed in very strongly, and that's really part of the problem, is there were those that attempted to build the Erev as if he agreed to it.
Where?
What?
The Erev
in Flatbush. As if he agreed to it. He said he knew that this is going to be a political a red herring, and he had no intention of getting drawn into it. So when he came and people asked him about it, and I know who the people were, and he basically said, "What did you come to me for?" He says, "What's Shishim Ribu? What's Dalsus Neulis? What's Mefulish? It's Harbideyus and Achreinim. I gave you a little bit, a little skin of what there is." He says, "No, no, Sifri Achreinim Suchim Lefanecho. What do you need me for? What do I have to define for you?" So, one person went, at least. But some people, I shouldn't say one, some people went. And they said that Ramesh has signed off that we can make the Erev. And they used that as the means by which they wanted to gather public support for the Erev. So that Rav Moshe was not, then Rav Moshe wrote publicly that he does not agree with it. That was his reason. But if they had gathered all the Gedolim that were in favor of it, he wouldn't have thought it was correct. But on the other hand, he would not have come out against, I don't think he had any intention of coming out against it publicly, but he would not allow his standing to be distorted either. And there were those. I'll tell you why. I should spell out. Soloveitchik is a tzal as a briska. Now the Rambam has a chumrah. If you keep the Rambam's chumrah, that's it. You forget about every Erev. Every Erev. I don't even know if the ones in the... I'm not even sure if the ones that are for private Rashiyas would even be good according to the Rambam. I'm not even sure of that. The Rambam holds if the space between one pole and the next of the Erev is more than 20 feet, that the Erev is possible. The Shulchan Aruch, in fact, cites the view of the Rambam in that regard. So if you take that, that's the end. There's nothing to even talk about. That's why I'm sure that Rav Soloveitchik, that's all being a briska, it was nothing to talk about by carrying an Erev beside a chutzpah, any consideration. So these are the issues which are involved. They are unclear. as I say, we don't have a strong track record until more recent times about them. And it would be apparent that a number of the Gedolim that have lived in this community, we're talking largely in the United States, were for varied reasons, halachic and perhaps other reasons too, were not so anxious to establish Eruv all over, whatever the reasons may be. But the halachic considerations are very significant, you know, besides other considerations.